Welcome to another deep dive. This one hits close to home, literally. State sales tax. You know, we all deal with a lot, but let's be honest.
Yeah.
Can be pretty confusing. Today, we're going to go beyond just calculating those percentages. Mm-hmm. At the cash register, we're going to pack the legal side of things, thanks to an article from originalintent.org. And this one is a real eye opener.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It's not just about the math. This article dives into the concept of sales tax being an excise tax, what that actually means, for who's truly responsible for paying it.
Okay, so excise tax, it sounds a little bit like lawyer jargon. But this article is suggesting it's a crucial distinction. Can you break it down for us?
Absolutely. An excise tax is levied on specific activities or privileges. Think of it like a tax on the right to do something rather than a tax on your income or property.
So instead of taxing what you earn
or
own, it's taxing a specific action.
Yes.
In this case, selling.
Exactly. And the article uses some interesting examples. Straight from legal code, for instance, California's Revenue and Taxation Code specifically states that sales tax is for the privilege of selling tangible personal property at retail.
Interesting. So the emphasis is on the privilege of selling.
Yeah.
Not simply the act of buying. That seems to shift the focus towards the seller.
It does. And this is where things get interesting. The article asks, who exactly is the retailer responsible for this tax?
Okay.
It challenges the assumption that anyone selling anything is automatically a retailer in the eyes of the law.
So if I sell some old books online, am I automatically a retailer and responsible for collecting and paying sales tax?
Those are the lines. Get blurry. And this article really encourages us to think critically about these distinctions.
This is getting thought-provoking already. So how does this retailer definition tie into who actually owes the sales tax?
Well, the article goes deeper into another legal concept, the definition of a person. Oh. And you might be surprised to hear that it's not as straightforward as it sounds.
Wait, person. So is everyone considered a person when it comes to sales tax?
Not necessarily. The article explains that in this legal context, person can include
corporations,
partnerships, and yes, even individuals.
Okay.
But it makes a crucial distinction. That individual often refers to someone acting on behalf of a business or legal entity, not just any private citizen, going about their day.
Ah, so there's a legal difference between a citizen and a person in this context. Why does that matter for sales tax?
Because the article argues that a private citizen exercising their right to buy and sell personal property might not actually fit the definition of a person liable for sales tax. They might not be considered the retailer the law is targeting.
Hold on. Are you saying that everyday people buying and selling their own stuff might not actually be legally obligated to collect sales tax?
That's the argument the article presents. And it's rooted in the concept
of inalienable rights. It suggests that citizens have certain rights
that's a direct
and can infringe upon, including the right to buy and sell their own property. So it's not just about legal definitions. It's about fundamental rights as citizens. This is where things get really interesting.
Exactly. But of course, there's a counterpoint. The article acknowledges that many states operate under the presumption that everyone is a retailer and therefore owes sales tax.
So they assume everyone's guilty until proven innocent.
It does raise questions about whether that presumption is always valid, especially considering the citizen versus person distinction we just discussed.
Yeah.
And this is where things can get tricky for individuals who might not even realize they're caught in this legal gray area.
Wow, this is much more nuanced than just handing over a few extra dollars at the checkout.
It absolutely is. And understanding these nuances is especially important. When we think about the think and act locally concept, sales tax laws and how they define retailers can vary widely from state to state.
So what might be considered a retail sale in one state could be treated differently in another.
Exactly. And that's why knowing your rights and responsibilities becomes even more critical. At the local level, we can't assume a one-size-fits-all approach.
When it comes to sales tax,
it sounds like we need to be extra careful and informed, especially if we're buying or selling across state lines.
Absolutely. And the article highlights some common pitfalls that people fall into. Regarding sales tax, we'll explore those in more detail next, so stay tuned. Let's dive into those. Potential pitfalls, you mentioned. The article highlights a few scenarios where things can get tricky, especially for those who might not be aware of the nuances of these laws.
Okay, so what are some common mistakes people make with sales tax? that could land them in hot water.
One common mistake is having a resale permit, but failing to properly use it. This could mean neglecting to collect sales tax on eligible transactions, or not accurately reporting and paying the collected tax to the state.
So it's not enough just to have the permit. You have to understand how and when to use it correctly.
Exactly. And here's another one. Letting your resale permit expire without formally canceling it. Oh, I wouldn't think. That would be a big deal. Why is it important to actively cancel a permit rather than just letting it expire?
Well, letting it expire can leave you in a sort of legal limbo. You're not actively using the permit, but you haven't officially ended your agreement with the state.
Right.
This can create confusion and potential liability if any issues arise down the road.
I see. So it's better to have a clean break and close that chapter properly.
Precisely. And speaking of things, that can inadvertently classify you as a retailer. The article points to filing certain tax returns that require you to declare gross receipts or gross income under penalty of perjury.
Now, I have to admit, those terms sound a bit intimidating. Can you explain why? Filing these types of tax returns could be problematic in this context.
It has to do with that class of person concept we discussed earlier. Filing these particular tax returns could align you with the same class of person as those who are generally required to have a resale permit and collect sales tax, even if you're not engaging in regular retail activity.
So even if I'm just selling a few personal items online, filing these returns could make the state view me as a business operating under a different set of rules.
It's a possibility worth being aware of, especially if you're not running a formal business and might not even realize you're falling into this category.
This is why I love these deep dives. It's all about those hidden connections and potential consequences that we might not even think about in our everyday lives.
You're exactly right. It emphasizes the importance of thinking and acting locally. What triggers certain classifications or requirements might differ from one state to another.
Right.
So understanding your state's specific regulations is key to avoiding unintended consequences.
Okay. So we've talked about resale permits and certain tax returns. Are there any other actions that could inadvertently put us on the radar as a retailer?
Interestingly, the article mentions federal income tax returns. Filing those could also place you within that class of person generally obligated to obtain a resale permit, at least in some states.
Wow. I bet most people don't realize that something as common as filing their federal taxes could have implications for their state sales tax obligations.
It's a subtle but important connection. And again, it underscores the need to be aware of the potential ramifications of our actions, even seemingly unrelated ones, especially as we navigate the complexities of different state regulations.
This is where the ire, think and act locally, advice really comes into play. We have to be mindful of the specific rules and potential pitfalls in our own states.
Absolutely. Now, even if you've managed to avoid those pitfalls, there's another important aspect to consider: the actual act of collecting sales tax.
Okay, let's talk about that. What are some things people should know about collecting sales tax, even if they might not be legally required to do so?
The article points out that even if you collect sales tax, whether you have a permit or not, failing to properly pay it over to the state can lead to serious problems.
So even if I collected sales tax unintentionally, perhaps because I wasn't aware of the nuances we've been discussing, I'm still obligated to handle it according to the state's rules.
Unfortunately, yes. It's not as simple as just returning the collected tax to the buyer. Once you've collected it, you have a responsibility to remit it to the appropriate authority.
Sounds like it's better to err on the side of caution and be fully informed before collecting any sales tax, even if you're unsure about your obligations.
You got it. It's about being proactive and understanding the specific requirements in your state. And of course, seeking professional guidance if you're ever unsure about your responsibilities as a buyer or seller.
Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to navigating these complex legal and financial systems.
I completely agree. And to help us synthesize all of this information, the article provides a helpful summary of key takeaways, which we'll explore in the final part of our deep dive.
All right, let's bring it all home. We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into state sales tax, from legal jargon to potential pitfalls. It's been quite a journey. Now, let's distill all of this information into some key takeaways that our listeners can actually use.
You're right. It's time to connect the dots and see what it all means for everyday people. The article does a great job of summarizing the most important points. It reminds us that sales tax is fundamentally an excise tax. It's not about what you earn or own. but about the act of engaging in a specific activity, the privilege of selling.
That emphasis on the privilege of selling is key, right? And leads us back to that crucial distinction between a citizen and a person in the eyes of the law.
Exactly. The article makes a compelling argument that as private citizens, we have the inherent right to buy and sell our personal property without unnecessary government interference.
So things like selling used furniture, clothes, or books online might not actually make someone liable for sales tax.
That's what the article suggests. Although, of course, it's always best to consult with legal or tax professionals for guidance specific to your situation and state.
Absolutely. We're not offering legal advice here.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to explore these nuances and challenge those common assumptions. Now, the article also emphasizes that sales tax is ultimately imposed on the person who is exercising that privilege of selling, often referred to as the retailer.
Right. And as we discuss, the term person can encompass various entities, including corporations, partnerships, or even individuals acting on behalf of business.
But it's not always black and white. Who qualifies as a retailer?
Yeah.
And who's ultimately responsible
yeah.
for collecting and paying that sales tax?
And this is where that think and act locally principle becomes so important. Each state has its own definitions and regulations. So understanding the specifics in your state is crucial.
It's about knowing your rights and responsibilities, both as a buyer and as a seller. So what are some key points people should keep in mind to stay informed and avoid those potential pitfalls we talked about?
The article highlights a few important takeaways. First, it reminds us that many states operate under the presumption that everyone is a retailer. But this presumption may not always hold up legally, especially for private citizens engaging in personal transactions.
Okay.
Second, it emphasizes that the definition of an individual in the context of sales tax can vary. It might refer to someone acting on behalf of a business or someone who has voluntarily obtained a resale permit.
Got it.
And finally, it stresses the importance of avoiding those common mistakes. Things like failing to collect and pay sales tax if you do have a resale permit, letting a permit expire without formally canceling it or filing certain tax returns. That could inadvertently classify you as a retailer.
Those are great reminders. We've covered a lot today. Legal definitions, fundamental rights, potential pitfalls, and even some thought-provoking questions about the system itself. It's clear that understanding these nuances is essential, especially in a world where we're buying and selling more and more online, often across state lines.
I agree. And it all circles back to that think and act locally approach. We need to be informed about our own state's regulations and make sure our actions align with our understanding of those rules.
So, dear listener, here's a final thought for you to ponder. Does the current system of state sales tax, with its presumptions and complexities, truly align with the original intent of taxing retailers?
Or is it catching everyday citizens in a net that wasn't designed for them?
That's a great question to consider. I encourage everyone to delve into the source material themselves and draw their own conclusions. Because as we've learned today, knowledge is power. Understanding these concepts empowers us to navigate the world of sales tax with more confidence and clarity. We'll leave you with that challenge. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating and sometimes frustrating world of state sales tax. Until next time, happy shopping and stay informed.